from Relay, this is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode number 86, recorded January the 9th, 2024, brought to you this time by Memberful and Factor. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell, and with me again for this special mega sports corner edition is the injury expert and author of Under the Knife, Will Carroll. Will, welcome back to Downstream.
Always great to be here. Always great to be here. You know, 86, that means you're coming up on 100, which is always big. Do you get like, do you get a t-shirt like Peloton sends you after your 100th ride?
You know, the suits at Relay ought to send us like a plaque or something saying congratulations on making 100 episodes. That would be nice. They should do that.
It's like all the YouTubers that get a million views, they have the plaque.
Yeah.
And then they're like legally required to put it in every video ever that they ever do.
I have that for, I have a 10-year Relay plaque that is in the background of my regular office. So that's fair. I've been so excited to talk to you because we did our out of time episode last time with, for Christmas with Tim Goodman. And, you know, that means a month has passed since I recorded an episode. And that was with Joe, who also doesn't really care about sports. And there has been so much sports stuff. And I've just been like, oh, man, I can't wait to talk to Will about this. So here we are. But first, something that Michael Davies, the executive producer, does says is like a sport, but is not a sport, is Jeopardy, a game show.
It should be.
But it should, I mean, what I love about Michael Davis, so he's famous because he did Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. He's also one of the Men in Blazers because he's a big soccer fan, as that kind of like minor media empire. But he's the executive producer of Jeopardy and has stabilized it. There's actually a really good Rolling Stone piece that Alan Sepinwall wrote that published this week that talks about stabilizing Jeopardy after Alex Trebek's death and all of the issues with the producer naming himself the host and then being scandalized out of being the host, which he should never have been the host to begin with, and how Michael Davis was brought in to stabilize it and grow it. And I love Jeopardy. The reason I'm bringing it up on Downstream is Jeopardy is actually one of the things that has seemed to be unstreamable. They have a deal. It's Sony distributes it. It is largely to ABC affiliates. And it has become, I think, the last surviving as sports starts getting streamed everywhere, which is something this podcast has covered. Jeopardy is one of those things. Syndicated TV is one of those things that holds you on broadcast. Now, I think nobody who listens to this podcast believes that broadcast will be replaced entirely by streaming, but the idea of a broadcast-only product, is still a little odd. It seems to be fading away because everybody realizes broadcast-only is not really a viable business model. You kind of need a streaming piece too. Anyway, Jeopardy has been that. And I was surprised to see in Sepinwall's piece in Rolling Stone about Jeopardy, Ken Jennings mentioned that they are going to start doing next day streaming with a partner. Now, it said in the fall, so I suspect this means for next season. And Jennings has apparently said it's probably Hulu or Prime Video. I'm excited about this. This is extremely Jason news because Jeopardy and sports are the only reasons I pay for an MVP. PVD, the you know, Fupo or YouTube TV. That's the thing that's holding me on traditional TV at all. And when I think that Jeopardy is probably going to be going on a streaming service, and as we're about to talk about in our next segment, sports is also kind of all the stuff that's not currently streaming is going to be more aggressively streamed very soon. It makes me start to think that my TV habits are going to change even further, and I'm going to maybe relinquish something that resembles a cable bundle for the last time. So we'll see. We'll see, right? And I'll just pile in here. I have been using Fubo, which I really like because especially for sports, it has always been sports oriented. And they have on my Apple TV, they have a great multi-view feature that lets you pick any 2, 3, 4 channels and watch them simultaneously, which is great for college football, especially. But I am actually trying YouTube TV again. I paused my Fubo subscription and I'm back on YouTube TV, which honestly isn't as good app wise, but has some advantages. It has more 4K channels. It has support for surround sound audio instead of just stereo, which means like you're watching a football game on ESPN and you can actually hear the announcers in the center channel, and the stadium sounds come from the rear and the sides, and so I've been enjoying that, and that's in part because the final destruction of the Pac-12 network.
it'll come back now that they have.
But Cal's not in it now. Just ACC all the way, I guess. And that's an ESPN thing, so it kind of goes wherever ESPN does. So I may not need this anymore, but Jeopardy was one of those things that's just a weird outlier. Like, oh yeah,
yeah,
you can't. I mean, they, in fact, in the Rolling Stone story, they say they estimate, I think, 15% of their viewership is via pirated streams because people are watching it who don't have TV. And so how do they do that? There's no legal way for them to do it.
That makes sense. Yeah. I'm going to ask a question just because you brought it up. Surround sound is a big deal. I have a setup at home, and when it's just stereo, it does my receiver does a fairly good job of virtualizing it. But you know, when you go on Netflix or Apple TV, I think Apple TV Plus does the best job with Atmos. Almost everything is in Atmos. Mm. It's mixed really well. Shows like Foundation do it really well. How many people have that, or have they just given up and maybe gotten a soundbar?
Well, I think even the soundbar, though, is a multi-channel thing, and that's my feeling about it. I have a 5.1, so I have a center channel speaker, but even with a soundbar, what you're getting is a discrete center channel with the announcers in it for sports, usually is how they do it, and having a discrete center channel that the soundbar software can tune or that you can tune in your soundbar is also going to get you a clearer, it gets you clearer announcers, mm-hmm. and it gets you more atmospheric stadium sound. Yeah. And I had missed it, honestly. Every time I watch like Prime Video NFL or something like that, I'm like, oh yeah, right. This is what it sounds like. But Fubo was just like, nah, we don't care. It's in stereo, other than their 4K stuff, which is in 5.1. So like I can get the Premier League in 5.1, but I couldn't get ESPN, and now I can. And it just sounds a little bit better. And they've got more 4K content on YouTube TV as well. So we'll see.
The Jeopardy thing is interesting to me because I've always thought there are two shows on, you know, regular TV, so to speak, that just screamed out for live viewing and gambling. And Jeopardy is one of them, but you would have to do it live. Right. And I think, you know, obviously there's some production to it, but I honestly don't know. I know people that have been on the show and I've never thought to ask.
Michael Davies says that he would love to do a live Jeopardy. And I've had that same thought, which is, it unlocks some interesting things if nobody knows who wins.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, if you don't know who wins, but you know, we get the lag problem for gambling. The other show is American Ninja Warrior. I think American Ninja Warrior would be huge for gambling, but it's months later and everybody knows who won.
Everybody knows. Yeah, that's right. In fact, that's how you usually, if you want to spoil yourself for any of the reality shows, you discover that somebody knows. If somebody's going to take bets on it, somebody will go in there and try to make some money off of it and probably get fired.
Yeah. The Jeopardy thing, you know, it's interesting that syndicated TV even still exists. But God, that's so much thing. You know, all the reruns of there's so many channels that are just reruns of Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, there's money to be made. This is the thing about, like, there are two ways of viewing business in general. And it's, are you viewing for growth, long-term growth, or are you viewing for making money? And you can choose, right? Like, investors choose for growth, but if you're running the business, making money ain't bad. And and so all the conversations over the last few months about, like, NBC and Warner talking about spinning off their cable assets into new co's or spin co's or something like that. And when we talk about the vMVPDs in a minute, this the same goes for them, which is there's a lot of money in cable TV and cable channels and Fubo and YouTube and Hulu Plus live TV. Like, there's money in Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune and those Big Bang Theory reruns. Is there growth? No, there's certainly not. But there are lots of people with TV still who watch TV and watch the commercials on TV, even outside of live sports, which is the huge one. And so, yeah, like Jeopardy. So my understanding is Sony makes a huge amount of money from Jeopardy, and Jeopardy's not even on streaming; it's just on broadcast. Now they're going to put it on streaming too, and I think in part they can do that because their ABC affiliates and all of that have realized that Jeopardy is not going to keep people from cutting the cord, and they've repriced it where now they've got a deal where it's not exclusive. The next day it'll be on probably Hulu because again they're mostly ABC affiliates, so I think that is Disney being perfectly happy to do that deal with Sony. But like, I think, and this is something that I used to talk about with Julia all the time, is like, there are these two ways of looking at it. Like, just because it's a business that's in decline doesn't mean there isn't money to be made. There's, in fact, sometimes a lot of money to be made.
Yeah.
It's just not exciting. It's not cutting edge, and it doesn't have growth.
Yeah. I'm curious, between, you know, losing something like a Jeopardy, I don't think that's going to happen imminently, but, you know, the world is moving to streaming at some point. Jeopardy will figure that out. The other one is, and not to get political here, but one of the points that, that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is saying, if he's confirmed as health secretary, he wants to get rid of pharmaceutical ads on TV, which are a big lot money. Of the ads I see on TV.
Yeah, big money.
Yeah, that would, I mean, I think for local channels, that would be brutal.
And keep in mind, too, that that although streaming has traditionally been a, you know, you pay for access, the fact is, all streaming, even if you pay for access, their live sports is with commercials, and they count on that as part of the cost of their, you know, how they make back their money. And the sports broadcasts are packed with pharmaceutical ads. So that would be a huge, that that's one of those cases where politically it's the push comes to shove about, like, oh, well, I know this one person says this, but also all the other big businesses are going to say, well, wait a second. You know, and yeah. And does the policy win there, or does the big, you know, lucrative American business that wants to spend money or be paid by a big pharmaceutical company, do they win? And I not to be too cynical here, but I suspect that the big American businesses with lots of money will win that battle.
Yeah,
in the new
I agree.
Administration. We will,
I agree.
Yeah, we will see about that. Anyway, so I'll report back about YouTube TV versus Fubo, but it's fine. It's good. I mean, we'll see. And I think it's actually a little cheaper.
What will it be now with the merger? Will it be like Fulu?
Well, okay. So let's move on to Fubulu Corner, which is weird names. I saw somebody on social media. I think it was Mike Schur, actually, who was like, imagine showing this headline to somebody 1 year ago and they wouldn't understand it, because it's about Fubo, Venue, and Hulu. And Flagship, whatever it ends up being called. That's our next segment here, which is so something we've been following on Downstream is this lawsuit between Fubo, which is a virtual, it's cable over streaming provider, and they sued the Venue partners. Now, the Venue partners are, we'll put a note in our document that said, what the hell is Venue? And I think that everybody is going to ask this question. So I'm gonna say here. So Venue is a joint venture that was started by Disney, Warner Brothers, Discovery, and Fox. And what they said is, we're going to put all our sports stuff, the stuff that's on broadcast and cable, but not available, most of it or lots of it, on streaming. And we're going to create a subscription service where you can just pay us over the top for streaming and get all of Fox's sports broadcasts, all of Warner Brothers Discovery sports broadcasts, and all of ESPN sports broadcasts on one service. And that's Venue, they called it. Now, this precipitated a lawsuit from Fubo, because Fubo was set up to be this as a concept, which was, what if we can make like a light cable bundle that's just got the sports in it for sports fans? And that's their primary focus. And what they found was that ESPN, Disney, and Warner Brothers Discovery, TNT, and Fox don't want to play that game. They want to play the traditional game of saying, well, if you take this channel, you've got to take these 15 other channels, and you've got to pay us for ESPN and all this other stuff. And it meant that Fubo looks just like YouTube TV. It just looks like a cable bundle. So they sued because they said, you're trying to make that bundle that you won't offer to anyone else for yourself, and that's anti-competitive. And I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a judge, but how could it not be seen as anti-competitive? It's literally a special cheap deal only made to themselves. And so this lawsuit, they seemed surprised, but this lawsuit, I wasn't, has proceeded. And the judges involved have refused to stop it because they think that there's actually a pretty good chance that Fubo has a point here, right? That they're self-dealing and cutting themselves a special deal with this thing called Venue. So the other shoe dropped in a fascinating way in the last couple of weeks, which is, I think it was maybe Monday that this happened. They announced that Fubo is merging with Hulu Plus Live TV, which is Disney's product. And as a result, they are settling the lawsuit. They are putting hundreds of millions of dollars into Fubo. Disney will end up owning 70% of this merged company. They're going to have a single tech stack, although they'll probably keep Hulu Plus Live TV and Fubo as separate brands, at least for some period of time. They will have 6.2 million subscribers, which is actually within shouting distance of YouTube TV as a strong number two in this category. And that so that's means Venue can go ahead unless somebody else sues, which is a possibility that somebody else might step in and
Google
say, wait a second, we're an interested party like YouTube or or a cable company. Saying, because I'm sure there are cable companies who would love to offer a skinny sports bundle too, and they can't allow one either. Yeah. And part of this deal is that Fubo will be able now, as a part of the Disney cabal, to sell a cheaper sports package that is focused on the same kind of things. Basically, they're going to get the same deal that Venue has.
They're going to get Venue, right?
They basically get Venue, exactly.
And see, this is the thing I can't understand. You know, they haven't done a great job. They haven't defined Venue in the marketplace.
Right.
We know it's a bunch of sports from three of the biggest sports rights houses. But what the heck is it? You know, is it how much is it? You know, what does this do to ESPN right. Plus?
Well, they say it's $43 a month.
Which is too high.
Which is a lot, although again, to get Fubo or YouTube TV, we're talking like 70 or 80 a month. It's essentially what you're paying for cable. So it's less than that. So one analysis of this that I saw that I thought was really smart said, this is Disney bracketing different price ranges. So they're like, you want cable? ESPN's on there. You want no cable, but you want everything. You got Fubo in there and Hulu Plus Live TV. Those will be in your $80 range. You've got Venue down at $40 a month. And then you've got Flagship, which doesn't include any of that other content from those other companies. It's just ESPN content, and that's $25 a month. The problem is, if you're a cord cutter and you pay for ESPN, you're not getting any of the Fox stuff. And you can get the Max. Max will have the Warner Brothers Discovery stuff on it. Fox is just sort of like, hasn't said, I imagine Fox will offer their own thing too at some point here.
I think Fox is going to sell. For.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, could be.
I mean, with the court case on the kind of succession part two that the Murdoch family has had,
right.
I just think they're going to end up selling because still a very valuable asset. And if they can't decide who gets to run it or who gets it's like a bad divorce.
It is the poster family. Child for what I was saying before, which is you can have a thing that's very profitable, even if it isn't the most exciting. Like the part of Fox that they kept and didn't sell to Disney is that essentially it is a bunch of broadcast TV assets and some cable assets, but it does have some value. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happens too, but the answer is it's a mess, but I think that Disney's view here is they just want you to be able to buy sports in a bunch of different ways. If you're a cord cutter, you shouldn't, like, it's not in anybody's best interest other than cable companies to say you can't watch sports if you cut the cord. And and ESPN especially has been that up until, sometime this year when these things will launch.
And you've made more sense than anybody else I've heard on this.
It's hard. Fubo, Venue, Hulu.
The thing that I still don't get, and this is Disney at the heart, because people are talking about Jimmy Pitaro as being Bob Iger replacement. Flagship has been under development for how many years now? How many whispers have we heard about this thing?
They seem to have gotten serious only last year.
Yeah. But hey, how hard is it? Yeah, how are you going to market this thing? Hey, ESPN. I think everybody's referred to it as Flagship for so long, unless they just call it ESPN the stream.
Yeah.
I think they're stuck with it. I think we're probably all, that small, very online people like us are just going to call it Flagship.
Sure.
They have to know what's going on, one would hope. And that makes Venue and all the rest of this not make sense. It's one of those things where I think the marketplace is so confused right now. Does Fox sell? We know that Comcast is going to spin off its channels. We know that Warner is prepping to spin its channels, possibly into the same company. Mm-hmm. And if Rick Lazarus is going to run it, I'm betting on it. That dude's a winner. But with all this movement and, whether it's spinoffs or consolidations or rebuys or, Yeah, who the heck knows? It sure doesn't seem like Warner Brothers Discovery is doing any better than Warner Brothers AOL. It's just such a mess that I don't know how you plan for it.
Yeah.
I don't think these executives, are worth all the money we're paying them. I don't think anybody is, but I see why they're getting the big bucks because, oh my God, everything's moving.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges with this stuff, too, is that, because it's new and different and being talked about and there have been lawsuits and all of that, I feel like there is a little bit too much hype for products that are actually not going to be that interesting. Like Venue, again, there are people who will pay for Venue. And I'll tell you, again, if it had Jeopardy on it, yeah. I might pay for it because it would be way cheaper than what I'm currently paying. But it's a niche service because it's for cord cutters who only want sports. It's a very niche service. And Flagship is even more of a niche service. And this is, I think, my big question here is, what is Flagship in the end? Because I think Flagship should be what Venue is. And I don't quite understand why Venue exists as a joint venture of these companies. I think it would be much better off to use the ESPN brand and for Disney to cut deals with Warner Brothers Discovery and Fox and any and offer either in the Flagship package or as add-on plans other sporting leagues that are out there, including the NFL games that are on Paramount Plus and on Peacock, and try to build something that you can either buy it or link to it from inside whatever this ESPN app basically that's doing Flagship. I don't know why you need yet another thing that is a formal joint venture versus just some business deal. And it makes me wonder too if in the end Venue ends up just getting bought out by Disney anyway.
I've been wondering that, because the explanation that I've heard, it wasn't Patara, it was one of the ESPN execs saying that it was going to be kind of the TV guide of sports.
Yeah.
And that even if they didn't have it, they would show it and link to it. So if I wanted to watch a Champions League game on Paramount, it would say, do this, which gives the opportunity, much like I know Amazon does, I don't know, Apple kind of does it for everything but Netflix. Amazon's selling you the channel inside there. That kind of made sense to me. Give me a central hub and who else? I mean, ESPN is still trusted.
Right. Launch that app, even if they don't have the game, they will tell you that the game is happening and they will either offer to sell it to you or just will link over to the app that is currently showing it. That's actually, I think, a good strategy.
Exactly. And I've wondered, and I love the app, Apple Sports, the little simple just get the score app. Why wouldn't they have links? Why do we not have an Apple TV Apple Sports app? I know they do the pop-ups, which are great. But it seems an opportunity. If they could be the central hub, why not?
Yeah, I think thinking outside yourself, and especially if you've got some existing business deals to sell, like this, that was my thought, is you want to sign up for Paramount Plus right inside the ESPN app so that you can watch all of CBS's stuff, Premier League or Championship League and Champions League and their other soccer as well as their NFL stuff.
I would watch the Championship League. Sunderland's doing well this year.
It's all about ships, actually. That's what I hear. Well, it's all to play for here, but I will say this. I feel like in 2025, we will finally get some resolution about streaming sports, right? Like the game's not going to be over, but we will have some real products because what we don't have now is real products and real prices and real customers and real apps. All we have is talk and deals and lawsuits and enough of that, I say.
Yes.
Time to get down to brass tacks, and whether Venue shows up at March Madness, whenever Flagship launches this year, what the contents are, like the devil is in the details, and we have no details now. All we have are press releases and lawsuits. So let's get it. Yeah, exactly. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Memberful. Monetizing a passion takes work. That is the truth. You have to have the right platform in place to build a membership business that's best for your audience. But it is hard when you are already busy with the work you do to reach your audience. And of course, any other projects you've got, I feel like I've got five jobs. That's why Memberful makes it simple to build and run a membership business, like the business that Relay runs, like the businesses I run with Six Colors and the Incomparable, all of them are on Memberful. Memberful lets you offer membership perks and exclusive content to your loyal followers, giving you full control over who has access to your blog posts, newsletters, online courses, podcasts, private community, and more. You can easily set up and manage your membership program with Memberful's intuitive platform. You create multiple membership tiers and payment options that cater to your audience. And with Memberful, you'll always retain full control over your brand, your audience, and your business. Memberful seamlessly integrates with tools you already use. That's the best part, including WordPress, MailChimp, Google Analytics, and Discord, so you can start monetizing your content without changing your existing workflow, all while building and maintaining a close relationship with your community. And with seamless checkout via Apple Pay and Google Pay, your audience can sign up and start reading your private posts or listening to your exclusive podcast episodes within minutes. When I launched my memberships, I chose Memberful. And the thing about it that I've loved the most is the plugin support. The content connects with other things. You want to use newsletters? There's MailChimp. There's also MailerLite, and there's several other mailer systems too that you can choose. So you're not locked into just one. The WordPress integration is spectacular. It's actually why I moved Six Colors to WordPress, is because after using it with another system for a while, I thought, you know, this would be a lot easier if I just could build it all in WordPress. But you don't have to use WordPress. You can use their API and build on anything you want. Integrating our community with Discord, it's a plugin. It's a couple of clicks, and then it's there. It's been so easy to do it, and the results are amazing. Like, look, the advertising world is tough, and you're an independent content creator. It can be extremely difficult to run your business and plan your life with the vagaries of an ad system, right? Like, it just, sometimes there are ads, sometimes they aren't. It's really hard. But you know who's there for you? Your audience is there for you. And by letting your audience pay you money in exchange for access, content, whatever, you can build up long-term relationships and a stable income. And don't build it yourself. Don't build it yourself. You can just use Memberful to do it. It has been a huge part of building and growing my business and actually letting me keep doing what I'm doing. So highly recommend them, not just because they're an advertiser this week, but in general, I mean, just look at the results. Upgrade downstream, Six Colors, The Incomparable. It's all on Memberful. Monetize with a partner, not a platform. Whether you're launching, growing, or switching platforms, Memberful is committed to providing exceptional support at every stage of your journey. With Memberful, you're not just getting that tech solution, you're also getting a trusted partner. They are ready to offer personalized guidance from setup to strategy, and I've tapped them for all sorts of things. They are so responsive, very helpful. Go now. If this is resonating with you, go now to memberful.com/downstream and get started with Memberful today. That's memberful.com/downstream. You can get started for free because there's a test system that you can set up, and you can try it out and have like sample users and do the whole thing and see it for yourself. So many great ways, easy to get started. You don't have to commit in order to explore. memberful.com/downstream. Thank you to Memberful for their support of this show and also literally everything I do. All right, let's move on. I wanted to mention something that I talked about last year when we turned the year, and I talked about the dominance of football in American television.
Massive.
It's useful for people who don't follow this closely to understand just what it is. Now, the top rated TV shows of 2024 regressed a little bit, but only in the sense that every 4 years, a presidential election comes along and takes a lot of the top slots. So 16 of the top 100 shows in the ratings on U.S. broadcast TV this year were politically related, same as 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But even with that, of the rest, 71 of the top 100 were NFL games. This is the stat. And last year it was in the 90s, and next year it'll be in the 90s. But mm-hmm. This year it was 71. But still, it's staggering. Beyond that, 4 college football games, 2 Olympics broadcasts, the NCAA women's basketball final, game 5 of the World Series. And then it's beyond that, it's the Oscars, the Grammys, and the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade. And that's it. So
my grandmother used to love watching those parades, and I was always like, why?
Yeah. So politics and Politics, a parade, two award shows, and everything else is sports. But just to be clear, 71 in the NFL and only 4 in college football. So that's what we're dealing with there. So it's just a little data point, but I wanted to put it out there that and I'll put a link in the show notes to the Sportico story about it. But like, just keeping in mind how the NFL, even as college football, I think gets a lot of talk and does very well and makes a lot of money. But the NFL rules, that's the
absolutely
thing to remember, is the NFL rules.
Exactly. One of the interesting things I heard this week was that, yeah, if you follow the NFL, Saquon Barkley had a chance to break a record, albeit, you know, in 17 games rather than 16. And it didn't play. He sat out. Yeah, the team wasn't going to gain anything from it. They didn't want him to get injured the way that happened with Christian Watson in Green Bay. But evidently, Roger Goodell was getting heated calls from the new Paramount people. I guess Skydance people. I don't know who they are. These games were going to get less eyeballs because the stars weren't playing. And evidently, they're going to come in with NBA-style rules about who plays when, and that's something they can do outside the CBA. So I think we're going to have some consequences for these Week 17, Week 18 next year. I'm almost sure it's going to be 19.
Yeah, they were rough. So it's gonna be crazy. They were really rough. I let me tell you, there were a couple good games, but as an inveterate NFL red zone watcher, I can tell you, wow, it was bleak. Like, you know, and that's, it is a problem. Like, you sell sports rights, you're selling contests that are contested and have the characters in them, you know, the players that you expect. And when you structure your league so that it's irrelevant and that players don't try or don't play or the games are bad, and it makes me wonder, I mean, yeah, there are lots of things about how sports leagues are scheduled that are very traditional, if you think about it. I was thinking about this in terms of college, but it's true in all leagues, which is, well, we have a schedule and we run it the same way every year. And at the and it makes me think, could you do something like flex not just the schedule, but flex the games at the end of the season to make more interesting matchups? And I know that is completely the way it was described to me was, what if you did a deal with in college football, what if you did a deal with another conference where the last game of the season was one versus their one, your two versus their two. There was a game guaranteed for everybody.
Like they do with the ACC Big Ten Challenge in basketball. They schedule that every year.
It's just that, and I know that there are some playoff implications there, but again, they control what the rules of the playoffs are too. I just think this is the kind of thing, money talking and rights holders talking, that does lead to change. And maybe fans won't like it, right? Because it's all about TV money. But if fans are like, well, we don't know if we have a game this week or not, it's like, well, too bad. Like, welcome to the world. College football already works like that, where you have no idea of what's going to happen until 2 weeks before. I wouldn't be surprised if the NFL is a little more aggressive on that.
That'd be really tough because, first off, okay, yeah, we had a bunch of sit outs and they suck, but we also had games like Minnesota versus Detroit, which was for the conference, for the number one seed.
Right. And flexed into the primetime slot.
Exactly. That's how that's supposed to work.
But they were lucky that they got that matchup right. They were lucky that was the final
game. It was a terrible game. It was a blowout, but still, the theory works. I don't know if you could flex games because the travel, especially, you know, teams think their fans travel with them, which is true in some cases, but I don't know how much. At first, the gate doesn't matter for the NFL. But, you know, they're booking out 200 things. They've got charter flights to set up. They can do it. I mean, they do it for the playoffs, but they're pre-booking playoffs as well. Now, we always joke about George Costanza being the assistant to the traveling secretary. That's one job I would not want. Traveling secretaries are real.
My thought is, with enough money, and also, you know, there are problems to be solved. I think the college football proposal was essentially that you would know who was hosting the games every year, and it would be a matter, and who was traveling, and then it would just be a matter of, so you rent, you have a hotel for the visiting team, even if you don't know who the visiting team is quite yet, and you set that up and you could do it. But like if a rights holder comes to you and says, you got to do something to make these games relevant, and players can play, although I'll tell you, I mean, that's the problem with football is they just don't want them to get hurt. That's the challenge. Right. And a non-contested game where the players aren't trying is also a terrible football game. So
that's,
I don't know.
The NBA All-Star game.
Exactly.
Which was so bad they're changing the format.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing is that, especially with college football, if private equity really does start getting in there the way they're talking about, and private equity is buying into teams, but not much. There's actually a great interview, I think, on Axios, maybe Semaphore, with the CEO of Arctos, which has bought into a ton of teams. They're trying to act like, you know, we're just here to help unlock value, which is what they always say. But they're going to expect a return. And if figuring out more competitive games is a way to do it without completely reconfiguring things, I you're right. They will. And why wouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, the other way to view that is to say the answer is to expand the playoffs or build a play-in round or something like that and reduce the regular season, which is another thing you could potentially do.
They're going to extend. See, that's the thing. They'll never reduce it. I think we'll have an 18-game schedule next year.
Well, imagine. Yeah. I mean, the NFL is definitely going there. I just think, imagine if that last week is play-in games that are flexed for teams that are on the bubble, and for everybody else it's a non-competitive, essentially easy rollover or games with bad teams. I wonder if there's something they could do there. The conspiracy theories,
that's
again,
intriguing.
The conspiracy theories, everybody's out to get my team, are always going to be there, but the truth is they're not out to get your team, they just want more money. That's the bottom line, is they just want more money. Let me take a break for a sponsor. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Factor. Are you feeling ready to optimize your nutrition this year? Factor has chef-made gourmet meals that make eating well easy. They are dietitian approved. They are ready to heat and eat in 2 minutes, so you can fuel right and feel great no matter what life throws at you. They arrive fresh. They are fully prepared, perfect for any active, busy lifestyle. And Factor Keto Meals can help you meet weight loss goals. They've conducted a randomized controlled clinical trial with Factor Keto. Though it's worth noting, results will vary depending on diet and exercise. And there are 40 different options across 8 different dietary preferences on the menu every week. It's easy to pick meals tailored to your goals. Choose from other preferences like Calorie Smart or Protein Plus, or yes, that keto option as well. There are so many. They can help you feel your best all day long with wholesome smoothies, breakfasts, grab-and-go snacks, and more add-ons as well. Reach your goals this year with ingredients you can trust and convenience that can't be beat. Now, Factor sends me meals, and as I've told you before, the best endorsement here is they send me meals on an ongoing basis. And whenever the Factor meals show up, you know, once a quarter, because I'm a podcast host, they're like, okay, you should try them again so you can talk about them. And I do try them, and they're very good. But what the other thing that happens is my wife goes, ah, the Factor meals are here, and they just disappear from the fridge because she is super skeptical about podcast sponsor stuff, let me tell you. But she had those Factor meals and was like, this is it. This is the solution. Take with me. She works outside the house, so she's got to bring a lunch every day, and the Factor meals disappear. I gotta have my host read information about Factor. I have to do that really, really quickly, or the Factor meals are gone because my wife takes them. And I'll just throw in a little side here. We were worried. My mom came and visited us for Christmas, worried about her nutrition. She's living alone. She doesn't want to really cook for herself. She's lost some weight. And I realized, you know what we need to do? We need to send her Factor meals. And she got her first Factor meals this week, just ate one yesterday. She ate it. She liked it. This is a huge victory for us. So I'm telling you, Factor meals are good. This is not like really lousy stuff that you microwave and go, ooh, gross, salty or rubbery or whatever. Like, the ingredient quality is very high. The meals are good. Give it a try. Eat smart with Factor. And this is how you get started. Factormeals.com/downstream50off and use the code downstream50off to get 50% off. That's the 50 off your first box plus free shipping. So try it. See for yourself. Maybe somebody else in your house will start stealing them from you. It could happen. Downstream, 50 off at factormeals.com/downstream50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Thank you to Factor for supporting Downstream and my wife's lunches and my mom's lunches. All right, I wanted to talk now. This is the main event as far as I'm concerned. Netflix, Christmas Day, and the NFL. Although it's more than that, because it's also Netflix and WWE, which premiered this week, and it's Netflix buying the rights in the U.S. to the Women's World Cup. And as a result, Netflix and sports, after many years of it being, well, Netflix isn't interested in sports, and then it was, well, Netflix is kind of interested around the edges and is interested in experimenting, and we're here now where it's like, this is the start of Netflix being very much all in on live sports with NFL in the U.S. Soccer is going to be in the U.S. because a lot of rights are still, you know, by country, although I think that's going to change. But the WWE, that is a worldwide deal.
Yeah.
And in fact, in some countries, it's a better deal because they've got all the WWE content, whereas in the U.S., there's still some that's held by another rights holder. So, yeah, just a big time for Netflix and live sports. And they got $24 million for their two Christmas NFL games, which is, I believe, down a little bit from their Christmas games last year, but still pretty great numbers. And I know they had some technical issues right at the very beginning of the game, but at least in my experience, when I tuned in, it looked good, sounded good. Yeah. It's obviously produced by, I think, what, NBC produced it? One of the networks produced the games.
I think it was CBS.
Their crew?
Yeah, Kay Adams did a good job with the pregame. They had good people, good announcers. It looked good. I thought it looked better than the Amazon one, which has a odd little look to it. I'm not sure if that's intentional. But everything was good. You know, I didn't have any trouble with the Jake Paul fight. I know a lot of people did. And, you know, I watched most of the Netflix Raw and had absolutely zero problems with it. So they figured it out fairly quickly, whatever the problem was with the Jake Paul. I think that was just, I think they didn't anticipate the numbers on
that. I think that's it. I think they had a planned ramp up to get to where they wanted to go for the NFL, and they didn't realize what the demand would be for that fight. But it's like, I mean, 4.9 million global live plus one for Raw. And again, that's global, which is important to this story, because I think Netflix's ambitions are global. And I think one of the challenges for sports in the future for the leagues and whoever is selling the rights, bidding on the rights, there's going to be a real question of what's a better deal: individual deals with partners in every region or a global deal with a global streaming license holder. And I'm sure the answer will be different for different sports and different regions, but I'm sure also that Netflix would really like, or Prime, you know, Amazon Prime Video or Apple would really prefer to just have global rights for something.
Absolutely.
rather than just, so Netflix doing the NFL just in the US and doing the Women's World Cup just in the U.S. It's, you know, that feels much more experimental to me. Like, that's what they could get, so they tried. But I can't imagine that their ambition is to have fractured sports rights in various regions. They really want it everywhere in the world.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see, because most of these global things, the Amazons, the Netflix, the Apples, are American. You know, it's not like the BBC is doing it. It's not like Sky is doing this. I'm trying to think of a French or equivalent. I'm sure there's a Chinese equivalent. But yeah, that's huge. I mean, in the first minute of the broadcast, Paul Levesque, the CEO of the WWE, was talking about 268 million people worldwide. Now, I mean, he made it sound like they were all watching, and that's clearly not the case and never will be. But they could. That would screw up the stream. But
yeah, that would break the stream.
The idea that there's all those eyeballs, and there's ideas that, you know, it's not just you and me sitting in the room. It's probably families and the kids watching, you know, Roman Reigns. It was a fine broadcast. You know, I haven't been into WWE. The things I noticed were that, you know, they did it at the brand new Intuit Dome.
And, right.
Great venue. I'm told it's great for basketball. They had every setup possible. They keyed in on certain matches. The issue for me, and this is one for WWE, the first 20 minutes were either Levesque talking or The Rock talking. And I realize these are the two, the chairman of the board and the other, and they're seriously, I mean, these aren't just actors slash wrestlers. And then John Cena came on later, who's doing his farewell tour. But these are actual running the business kind of guys. They announced that next year's Royal Rumble will be in Saudi Arabia. Saudi, a big investor in TKO, which also owns the UFC. Mark Shapiro, who's the president of Endeavor, was right down there ringside. And Ted Sarandos, and I forget her name, but the global or the global head of programming.
Oh, the Bella Baharian?
Yeah. She was up in a box, and they were there, which immediately reminded me of all these little live experiments, whether it's David Chang Live, whether it was the John Mulaney show, which I'm told is coming back, has led to this. But Ted Sarandos very clearly said, I don't want to rent sports.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, but he can't buy the NFL. Could he buy TKO? Absolutely.
Absolutely. And the advantage of something like, especially wrestling, a little less with the UFC, but with wrestling is you don't have to watch it live, right? That's the other beauty of it, is unlike most sports that's like live sports and it needs to be watched live, WWE is entertainment in a of, you know, sorry, everybody, wrestling is fixed. It's scripted. That's okay. That's okay. But it means it has legs because you can watch it the next day or the next week. And it's like a TV show more than it is like sports, even though it's in a sports context. And that, yeah, I do wonder in the end if Netflix would just say we'll have that. And then they've got all of that content for themselves worldwide and they own it and they are no longer, they pay one price and then they don't have to have rights negotiations over the course of, you know, every 3 or 5 or 7 years. I think, yeah. I mean, I think they will, I think they're going to do a lot of sports rights deals, but I can see how strategically owning some stuff that's throwing off content, investing in some new programming as well, that is, has got potential where they kind of have a piece of it is going to be a winner for them. But that said,
I'm waiting to drop is all the, for wrestling especially, they've always done behind the scenes stuff. They've done,
yeah, you know, it's part of the narrative thing. It's perfect.
They've spun off their own movie stars, for God's sakes. So I think Netflix can jump into the, you know, Drive to Survive kind of content very simply. It already exists. I did a very speculative article on baseball over at Under the Knife this week, talking about the rights and ESPN is going to opt out of its contract. But one of the things I said is, you know, at some point, somebody's just going to say, you know what, these rights are so expensive, even for MLB, why don't I just buy this whole thing? Because you could do that for $70-75 billion, which is a huge stinking number. But Warren Buffett has that kind of cash on hand at Berkshire. Netflix's stock is at what, 800? They could get that deal done tomorrow if they wanted to. I think that's the way it's going to go, is that these rights fees have gotten so outlandish, it just makes more sense to buy it. And I think Sarandos, you know, having said that out loud not too long ago, is going to be the one that says, screw this, I'm just buying it. And I think something like TKO, especially with the Saudi money, would be the easiest play.
Interesting. I want to mention the Women's World Cup just to say, you know,
that's gonna be huge.
It's U.S. rights, but they could, first off, they can add, I don't know what the bidding is like in other countries for this, but if they could add other countries over time to it, they could just pick them up and they've already got their production and they're taking the feed and like they could add. And so it could be Netflix in more countries. It feels very much to me like the day is coming when worldwide rights or rights in many very high profile, large countries that have got streaming and Netflix penetration, there will be a deal like this. And there are articles out there, the amount of pearl clutching about free TV for sports is enormous. And I just want to say it. I get that it's a milestone when something's not on broadcast TV and that not everybody has it. But when people say, oh, but now it won't be on free TV. It's like, what is free TV?
Yeah.
What is free TV in America? Who has rabbit ears? Because that's free TV. Yeah. Over the air. If you put up an antenna, what percentage of people are getting their TV entirely by over the air? I don't know what it is, but it's extremely small. Extremely small.
Those people.
If you have cable, you're paying for cable. It's not free. It's nope. You're paying for it. If you have streaming, you're paying for it. And then there's a generational issue here too, which I have to throw in there, which is for my kids, Netflix is TV.
Yeah.
Netflix is TV. That's it. So Netflix having sports, all of the sports leagues and organizations are looking at it and thinking, oh my God, our demographics are going to get so much better. Even NFL on Prime Video with Al Michaels still getting it done, probably coming back next year.
Yeah.
Their demographic is younger than the average NFL broadcast because it's a streaming service. And yes, yeah. that means in part that older people have a hard time watching it, but it also means they're reaching younger people who are comfortable with the streaming paradigm. So, you know, I guess what I'm saying is get used to it.
Yeah.
And Netflix having sports is not going to make it so that people can't see it because Netflix is TV to a whole generation of people, to multiple generations at this point of people.
Yeah, I just don't have. Yeah, I can remember back in it was 19. I can remember this clearly. In 1982, we got cable in Odessa, Texas. And we had like 10 channels, which was outlandish. And most of them were local channels in other places. I can remember we had WTBS, we had WGN in Chicago, we had WOR sure. in New York. I grew up a Cubs fan because they were the only one with good
WGN
uniforms.
Games, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Braves are
had a new announcer named Harry Carey. Mm-hmm. It kind of drew me in. New third baseman named Ryan Sandberg. People would all come over and they would be like, why are you paying for this? TV is free. And, you know, TV should be free. It turns into this kind of, you know, retrograde argument, but it hasn't been. And the world hasn't died. You know, sports is not weaker because of this. I can remember people saying, you know, everything would be on pay-per-view. And, you know, for certain sports, that's pretty much the case. But, you know, boxing is also not the healthiest sport in the world. Neither is UFC. So for me, look, streaming is the future. Get used to it.
Yeah.
And even then, I don't think what we have now, this sort of streaming architecture, I don't think that's going to hold because they're going to have to figure out how to make all this stuff pay off. Forget the growth. They need profits. And most of these models aren't working right now.
Right. It feels like the avalanche has started. This is a really milestone moment. The streamers have the money. I did mention there is a, as we record this Saturday, there's another NFL playoff game that's streaming on Prime Video. That's the Al Michaels.
Do you know which game that is?
It is Steelers Ravens.
Okay.
And you know, the NFL that will be broadcast on local TV in Pittsburgh and Baltimore. And I don't want to sound like I'm poo-pooing broadcast. I do think in the end, broadcast is a channel for content, but as an exclusive channel, it feels over. But like the Super Bowl, people are like, oh man, someday Super Bowl is just going to be on Peacock or something. It's like, well, as long as the rights holders have broadcast channels, the Super Bowl will be on broadcast. Look at Disney's strategy this year with Monday Night Football, where they started to say, please, can we put these games on ABC too? Like they were in the old days instead of just on ESPN. And that's because broadcast has reach. Like I said, when I listed the 100, you know, biggest ratings on broadcast last year, broadcast has great reach. And so you put the Oscars on Hulu and ABC, you put the Super Bowl on ESPN and ABC. That's what you do. Yeah. And I think will continue.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of and.
Yeah.
And for streaming, you know, we talked about this earlier, the thing, you know, if Jeopardy is the next day, so many things are the next day on Hulu or Paramount or whatever. It's gotten to the point where I almost, until the moment I have to find something, I don't think about what channel it's on, let alone what sort of is, I
And you're viewing in a guide.
Is it my Apple TV box or my X1
app,
box?
Search app, whatever it is, and you're finding it and whatever. And yeah, do I think, I don't actually know the details of this, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Women's World Cup includes a carve out that Netflix will also put the final on somewhere on like broadcast or something. Wouldn't surprise me if they had the option to do that, but we'll see.
It wouldn't surprise me if they offloaded a deal. I know with the Club World Cup coming up, that's going to be
on DAZN, right?
Yeah. And that doesn't have much reach at all. So I'm going to be very curious to see whether or not they do a deal with somebody.
We live in a world where, I mean, this happens with college all the time. And people are like, well, why is this? I thought the college, this particular conference, I thought the Big Ten, you know, was with Fox. Why is this on NBC? And the answer is NBC bought some games from them. Yeah. Now they are a sub-licensor of games, and that can happen for any of these rights too, where you spend a huge amount of money and then you're like, oh, let's sub-license some of this and get some of our money back. And that may happen. So we'll keep an eye. I wanted something funny, basically, that I wanted to run by you. My friend John Gruber posted on Blue Sky this week, ranking the number one, basically, broadcast teams in the NFL. And he put Buchan, Aikman, and he listed it as ABC, it's ESPN, but also, yes, ABC, as the best. Then he said Nance and Romo on CBS, then Tirico and Collinsworth on NBC, then Al Michaels and Kirk What's-His-Name on Amazon, and then finally Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady at the bottom on Fox. Tom Brady, interesting story, owns part of the Raiders now. Kind of have a hard time imagining Tom Brady at Fox feels like Tom Brady's what do I do after my retirement plan from 2 years ago, and not his plan from today.
Yeah.
And they have kicked Greg Olson to number two with Joe Davis on Fox. They're going to have the Super Bowl this year. Tom Brady's going to call a Super Bowl with Kevin Burkhardt. Okay.
Ain't going to be the Raiders.
I don't think he's long.
No,
that job.
I think that's his swan song. He calls the Super Bowl, calls it a day.
Sounds like he's actually involved in the hiring of the coaching staff of the Raiders already. So come on.
Yeah, this is it's bad. It was never going to work. I didn't think he'd be great at it. He's not horrible. And
he's not,
you know, Kevin's
he's not
friend,
Bill Walsh horrible.
No, Bill was bad, but Bill didn't talk. I mean, the thing that people don't understand is, and I've done games at minor league level, really low level stuff. Talking during a game for 3 hours is hard. Mm. You know, doing a local sports talk radio show for 3 hours is hard.
Extemporaneously for a long period of time is hard. I get those every now and then. I'm on a 2.5 hour long, you know, like MacBreak Weekly Tech Podcast, and somebody says, oh, you know, when you mentioned this thing 2 hours in, it was slightly incorrect because of this. And I'm like, dude, you try talking extemporaneously and then having the subject go in a direction that no one anticipated, and you're pulling things out of your brain and you make slightly inaccurate statements at a very pedantic level 2 hours in. It's like you try talking for 3 hours and not having that happen. It's incredibly hard.
It's, I don't want to pretend I have any great skill, but you know, these guys at the top level, especially Kevin, Joe Davis is great. I didn't think anybody would be able to replace Vin Scully, and he isn't Vin Scully, but he ain't bad. And when you think about, I know a lot of people crap on Joe Buck, but when you think about this, you know, 20 years from now, when you see historical things, when, you know, moments in the 2000s happen, whether it was, you know, a World Series game, whether it was the Cubs winning the World Series, whether it was a lot of Super Bowls or a lot of NFL things, it's going to be just like his dad, where you're going to hear his voice. It's just like Vin Scully. You're going to hear his voice. Joe Davis is the next one. That guy's just ridiculously good. And
he is good. There's a tone in his voice that I hate, because it's a little Craig Kilborn-y. It's just a little bit snide, and I don't like it. But he's a pro. You know,
whatever happened to Craig Kilborn? What is he doing?
I don't know. I think he's just counting his money somewhere. I think he's just counting his
money.
I do think Joe Davis is very good. It's interesting. You know, the feedback to John's list was really funny. I kind of agree with it as it currently stands. I think that if you bring Greg Olsen back and replace Tom Brady, that Fox slot goes up. I also think that the biggest question mark in this whole list is why Amazon chose to partner Al Michaels with a guy who's kind of a college football pundit. And Kirk Herbstreit has his moments, but color commentary on an NFL game is doubly not his moment. Yeah. And I don't understand why he's there, other than they feel like they need a hedge because Al is getting up there in age and Kirk Herbstreit could kind of do Al's job if he needs to. But like, there are vastly better color commentators than Kirk Herbstreit for NFL. I catch him. Look, I watch these games. My wife works on Thursday nights. I watch Thursday night football. Kirk Herbstreit forgets the rules of the NFL. He is always doing and you can see his brain realize, no, that's college rule. That's a college rule. Yeah. Don't do it. And to his credit, I mean, he's working hard. He's flying all over the country because he's got all the ESPN college stuff. But like, there are better choices for that. And I think that would, Al Michaels is still pretty good, but he could be elevated by having a better partner than that.
I think Kirk is really good at what he does, given all he does. I think on the other side, one of the things I've heard is that if Al leaves, and everything I've heard is he's coming back for next year.
Yeah, there was just a report today that said he fully expects to come back next year.
And well, let's hope he's okay. And quick shout out to everybody in LA, because it's some terrible crap going on.
For sure.
And we'll probably move the. Have they officially moved the game from SoFi?
They're holding on. They're not sure. They're going to watch it and see. But they've got the field ready in Phoenix. So yeah, good year.
They rolled it back in. I had heard that Pat McAfee was really close to getting that, and I love Pat. Pat's a great guy. He's a local, but talk about somebody that does everything.
Can't imagine it. No, very entertaining.
Him and Al
guy.
Would be. That not oil and water, no. But something much more volatile.
No. It's interesting to talk about. I mean, again, the rights are what matters, but the fact is, you want to put on a good broadcast, and you want to have people enjoy the game. There is no alternative unless you're doing the Manning cast or something like that.
That's where I think they might go is at some point.
Amazon tried some altcasts and they seem to have just given it up now, but like altcasts, I'm a big fan.
Didn't they have a statcast functionally?
They did. They had like an AWS statcast that was kind of sponsored and they did that. That was kind of fun. Not as fun as the Mike Petrello led MLB statcast on ESPN, but it was fun. And I think they also did some, they did the Dude Perfect, one too, where they had like YouTubers telling jokes and stuff while the football game was going on, and I'm all for it. Like altcasts,
try.
I think the challenge is the Prime Video interface is maybe not the best place for that as a showcase, but that's okay. But if you're going to do a traditional broadcast, I feel like Al Michaels could use a better partner, and then because it's fascinating to see the give and take on these pairings too. Cause like Aikman famously signed for a huge amount of money with ESPN and then said, could you please hire Joe Buck? And they went and they got Joe Buck from
for
Fox.
A huge amount of money.
I found that really funny. Cause like, I think Troy Aikman is very good, but I think Joe Buck is also very good at his job. Less of a fan of him as a baseball broadcaster than as a football broadcaster, but I think he's a great football broadcaster. He needs to stop saying no flags when the most exciting moment happens in a football game, because nobody cares. Like, no, the not being flags is not the story here. The touchdown is the story here, Joe. Come on. But still, so good at his job. So I was always surprised at the imbalance there of like, well, we got to get Troy Aikman. And then like, okay, we can also get Joe Buck. It's like, are you kidding? And I've heard people complain about Jim Nantz. They think like, I guess he's a golf announcer. And so they think Tony Romo totally elevates Jim Nantz. I don't agree with that at all. I think Jim Nantz is smooth as silk. I think he is a solid announcer, very good at his job.
I'm very curious because and one other one, we should probably pour one out for Greg Gumbel, who was a very underrated announcer.
Absolutely so good, and the voice of number one CBS broadcast for quite a while, and was really great at it.
I can't think of a selection Sunday without him.
That's true. Yeah. Mr. March Madness as well. Yeah. I remember when Greg Gumbel was just coming. He was like one of the original ESPN guys. But then everybody was like, oh, he's just Bryant's little brother. And then he Bryant's older brother. People didn't even know that because it's like Bryant Gumbel was famous and Greg Gumbel was this other guy who was over on ESPN.
Didn't mean to be pedantic 55 minutes in.
No, that's good. I mean, it's good. You're right. I thought of him as Bryant's little brother, even though he wasn't, because he was Bryant's less famous brother.
Yeah, exactly.
But then he acquitted himself quite well on the studio show, and then they moved him to play-by-play, and like, he killed it. He was great, and he was great at the March Madness stuff. So it is, yes, let's pour one out for him, for sure. But I think Nance does a good job. I think Romo is still very good, and here's the thing about Romo. I mean, the further you get away from being an active player, the less you're able accurately predict things. But here's the thing about Tony Romo. He actually likes football and is excited by what he's seeing. And the biggest complaint I have for any sports announcer is when it seems like all they want to do is criticize what they're viewing instead of being enthusiastic about what they're viewing. And this is my John Smoltz complaint, who apparently thinks that the baseball that he's broadcasting is terrible. And Tony Romo is genuinely excited about watching football games and about what happens in them. And like, again, you don't have to be a cheerleader. You can be critical of what you're seeing, but you do need to sort of like bring some enthusiasm to the sport. And he does.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he does a good job. Absolutely. I've always criticized Tony Romo because I don't think he prepares well. I think like you said, the further he gets from his playing days, he's not as psychic because he's not in the playbook.
Yep.
But Tom Brady is closer than Tony Romo to the game and not good.
And not as good. That's right. Which is bad for the future of Tom Brady as a broadcaster, which is why he's not going to be a broadcaster.
I do think that, you know, there's probably a quarterback playing now. Jared Goff comes to mind as well-spoken, could probably do it. In 5 years, is he the next Tony Romo? I don't know. Russell Wilson will probably be on TV because he wants to be president of the United States. So he's probably got to
start somewhere.
Yeah. But I do think that it should rotate. It should, if you're going to have X players, it should be recent X players and they're not around for years.
Right.
I am reminded of a conversation I had with Joe Morgan that I can now talk about, who's passed on. But, you know, people hated him. I mean, famously, there was Fire Joe Morgan written by Mike Schur.
Mike Schur, yeah.
And, but
my favorite blog of all time, by the way. So, yes. Yep.
It's one of those things where he was on for so many years and everybody said they hated him. But every dial test that ESPN did, they loved him because he was known. So if you do it once, you're probably going to do it for a while. It's going to be tough to get rid of John Smoltz just because he's a Hall of Famer and people know who he is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter whether he's good or bad because he is.
Yeah. And we've spent a lot of time talking about announcers here, but I think it's fascinating from so many perspectives of what do you want when you're building your program? What are announcers worth? What do you look for? And if you're an executive, you also have to view this as a development thing where these NFL broadcasts on CBS and Fox, they have to have multiple teams every week. Mm-hmm. And so like, who are you identifying who's in your studio show or who is in, you know, who is an active player or who in the playoffs, they do the thing, which I think is super smart, where they take active players who aren't in the playoffs and they give them a microphone. It's like, oh, that's really interesting. I think that's where Tony Gonzalez first got his start. Yep. And now he's on the Amazon crew there with Richard Sherman. And, you know, right again. So there's a development aspect, which is like, who are the up and comers? I think it's really interesting from a personnel hiring staging kind of aspect of identifying the people who are good at it. And, you know, everybody has different tastes. By the way, I haven't even mentioned his name other than in the initial list, but Mike Tirico, I think, is a treasure. And I say that not only because I think he's a very good play-by-play announcer for football, but he is also the guy who does the heavy lifting at the Olympics now for NBC. And he's so good at it. So I'm a big Mike Tirico fan. I'm not a big Chris Collinsworth fan. I feel like Chris Collinsworth could maybe move on and the world would be okay. But Mike Tirico, I'm a big fan of his. And I feel like the other challenge, if you're ABC, ESPN, or if you're NBC or Amazon, is you're the only game in town. when those games are on. And so you really do need to bring it, and you've got a lot of people focused on you. And it is a very different, it is the thing that starting in the 70s with Rune Arledge, the creation of Monday Night Football, having a showcase game, all eyes are on you. And it is a whole other level of pressure for those people.
Absolutely.
It's fun. I wanted to talk about our TV picks, but before we do that, really quickly, you want to talk about CES, my least favorite thing in the world, but yes, new TVs at CES. What struck you about what the announcements were that are going on at CBS right or at CES right now, not CBS?
Yeah,
that would be Tony Romo related. This is CES.
Obviously, everything in the world is AI now. And, you know, I saw some where Samsung TVs were going to have live captions and translations.
Yeah.
I just didn't see anything that AI could do for my TV. I don't find a compelling case.
Generative yet. AI backgrounds for when your TV is off.
Yeah. I've got one now. Nobody can see it, but those are actually great. But it's one of those things where I just don't see a compelling case unless, you know, can you give me better recommendations? Okay, but we've had recommendation engines for years. Netflix does a fine job. Could you do that with live TV? I saw nothing compelling. You know, how big does my TV need to be, says the guy with a 100-inch TV.
Here's the problem is the TV manufacturers, all of this is going to be in software, right? Like they're going to be, the onboard software is where you're going to succeed or fail. And I know like Samsung is going to do what they're going to do and all that. But in the end, it's going to come down to also like Roku and Google and Apple and all of that. And there is some, I feel like there's some things that could be done in terms of analyzing your habits and making suggestions and all that, but it feels like it's mostly going to be at the service level, the app level, not the system level. The problem is if you're a TV maker, you don't want to be a commodity maker. You want to add value to it. And I think they will continue to flail like they flailed with 3D TVs to desperately find something that will move the needle like the HD transition did. And even 4K did a little bit, but didn't really. We're still waiting for more 4K content. But they you know, they want to move TVs. They want to sell you a new TV. And so they're going to try. The sad truth is, and I say this as a tech guy, the best thing you could do with your brand new TV is never connect it to the internet.
Yeah.
Connect a streamer box of your choice, an Apple TV, a Roku, Fire, Amazon Fire, whatever you want, connect that. But like, don't connect your TV. And the reason is a lot of those TV manufacturers have software on there that will like watch what you're watching and then put ads and data mine you and send all that information back. And it's like, that's their business model. A lot of them, their whole goal is that they save a little money and pass it on to you. And then they sell your information. So just like, don't put it on your Wi-Fi ever and use a streamer box from a company that you trust more than whatever random company sold you a TV. They don't want to hear that because they don't want to be just a maker of a screen and a plastic box. They want to be, you know, have their business model and sell ads and do all of those things. But I think a smart consumer just says, nope, I'm going to buy your thing and use it as a screen for whatever I choose to put on it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. One of the interesting things to me, this has become kind of a hobby, is trying to figure out why YouTube is serving me certain ads. I am this close to buying the YouTube premium so I don't get said ads.
Yep.
But I swear to God, they give me more things for adult diapers and I'm getting older, but I don't feel like I'm the target demographic. And then
what is it? What is it that I did to make you get this?
Right behind it, they give me like pull-ups for older children. Huh. And I'm like, that's kind of the same thing, but not at all.
You're just in the diaper demographic, all directions. Just globally diaper demographic. It also could
but
be,
yet I am childless and continent.
A lot of ad targeting is bad. That's what the ad people don't want to tell you, is that a lot of ad targeting is fake.
Some of it is horrible. There's one I will speak to. I bought a pair of jeans, and great jeans, love them. I have gotten so many ads from that company targeting me, and I'm like, I just bought ads. I had the same thing with pans.
Yeah.
I bought a set of pans and they hit
me
with endless.
So you want to buy more pans? No, I never want to buy pans again. What are you talking about? No, that's the worst of it. Anyway, AI TVs. Pass. Let's talk about our TV picks, which I like to do. Things that you might want to watch other than sports. Will, what would you like to suggest?
Well, there are two, and I changed mine at the last minute because I reminded something. Yeah, we're recording this on Thursday, and I'm reminded that Traitors, the U.S. version, is coming out on Peacock starting tonight. If you haven't watched this, this is one of the few shows that Peacock has given multiple versions of. There's the U.S., there's the U.K., I think it's Australia, New Zealand. I think there might be one more. I haven't watched all of them, but the US and the UK versions are virtually the same. They're playing the same games, different sets. The US version is, you know, D-list celebrities from previous reality shows.
Right. This is the Rob Marianos of the world, yes.
Yeah. Love Boston Rob, but, you know, it's Real Housewives and people that I'm not invested in.
Oh, that's less exciting.
You know, the reality industrial complex has to feed itself. On the UK side, it's regular people, and it is vastly more compelling. I just find it, maybe it's me, but, you know, I'm sure they'll have the UK version. It's on, it's either Channel 4 or BBC. I can't remember which. It started last week. It's not on Peacock yet. They're probably waiting to drop them all. But Traitors is a really good show. The other one I want to mention, and I changed this at the last minute on you, Landman, the latest Taylor Sheridan show, which is fun. It's not, you know, it's not going to change the world. If you want to hear Billy Bob Thornton talking about the oil industry, but they had a scene last week. No spoilers, but Billy Bob Thornton, John Hamm, and Jerry Jones. Yes.
Huh.
That Jerry Jones.
Huh.
And Jerry Jones is giving this life speech to John Hamm, who's having a crisis. And my God, he was good. I am serious. This was tear jerking. I've grown up not liking the Cowboys. The way he treated Tom Landry had me out on him forever. But he gave this speech about why he bought the Cowboys, how he bought the Cowboys, that he did it to be with his kids. It is Emmy worthy.
Huh.
If he is not nominated, he was robbed.
Wow. Jerry Jones, for your consideration, guest star Emmy, which is a thing. You can be nominated.
It's
for
a
that.
Thing. You know, usually it's Carol Burnett or, you know,
and
it's always stunt
Man?
Casting.
Where is that? Paramount Plus?
Yeah, it's on Paramount.
Right. All right, I've got two. I'm going British with these two. First off, and you're going to have to, if you're not in the UK, you're going to have to hold on to this. If you're in the US, it's coming to BritBox. I can't reveal why and how I have seen it. Just advanced screeners, let's just say. It's a BBC show called Ludwig. It's David Mitchell from the greatest sketch comedy show ever devised, That Mitchell and Webb Look, as well as Peep Show, if you remember that one. Great British comedian. So funny.
They've and, put all the big fat quizzes on YouTube now.
Yeah, there's so many good UK game show content on YouTube these days. Anyway, David Mitchell is the star. This is basically a show built for him. It's a little like how Bad Monkey is perfect Vince Vaughn usage. This is perfect David Mitchell usage. Ludwig is a story about the elevator pitch is he is the world's foremost puzzle creator, and through a series of unlikely events, he is forced to pose as his identical twin brother, who is a detective, and a series of conundrum-based murders occur. And in each episode, he solves the puzzle. It sounds ludicrous, and on one level it is ludicrous, but the execution is everything. It's so good. It's just very good. There is an overarching story about what happened to his brother, and there are conspiracy theories, and he's trying to solve that puzzle while also trying to pretend to be a guy with more social skills than he actually has, because he's a shut-in who just makes puzzles all day at home in the house he grew up in, and now he's has to pretend to be his brother and be around real people. So there's a lot of sort of a social comedy along with pretty fun puzzle-solving murders, and it's coming to BritBox in a couple of months. And if you're in the UK, you can watch it now on iPlayer. Ludwig is the name of it.
I'm intrigued by this. This sounds very poker face-ish.
It is definitely Columbo-esque in some ways. Sounds like they're already talking about whether they might make an American version of it. It is a fun concept for a show, but David Mitchell for me is the selling point. So accept no substitutes. The American version will be whoever, I don't know who that would be, but David Mitchell is so great in the UK version. And my other thing that's coming back,
Joel McHale,
next week. Sure. Why not? John Hodgman is the match for David Mitchell. The American David Mitchell is John Hodgman.
Yeah. But could you build a show around John Hodgman?
You could. Maybe Ludwig. Could.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. All Creatures Great and Small is coming back next week. This is the new version of the classic British series that I watched as a child on PBS. This is also on PBS. And I believe when it premieres next week, if you are a PBS member, you can get a service we don't talk about here a lot, but there's a PBS app, and PBS Passport is your access to all of the content that PBS offers, including when All Creatures Great and Small episode 1 drops. All of them for the whole season will also drop on PBS Passport, and then they play out once a week on PBS. And again, if you're in the UK, you probably already seen it because it came out last fall. But I love it. It's a really great adaptation of a classic set of stories. It is gentle comfort TV. If you are looking for gentle comfort TV, you will not do better than the story of a young vet and his family in Yorkshire in the 1930s.
Is it just us, or... You should do a show. I'm not the correct guest host for this, but you should do a show on why British TV is just better.
Well, here's the secret. It's not. The British TV we see is good. The stuff that we don't see is terrible, but they don't export that. They're embarrassed by it. They don't export
That's fair.
It. But the good stuff is good. And watching Ludwig, I thought, there is a look. Because Slow Horses is like this, too. It's got a little better budget, but like there is the modern British crime show. Mm-hmm. Look, Luther, right? Like, and like they got that down. And I know it, and it doesn't cost as much as an American show would, and they only make 6 episodes of it a season, but they've got that down. They know how to make that show, and it's good. Good. They should keep making them. They're fun.
Line of Duty. That's never
Line
really.
Of Duty, great one.
I think that's on Amazon now. At least some of
Bodyguard.
It.
With the guy from Game of Thrones. There are a million of them, and they're all pretty good. What's the one? It's a little bit different, but what's it called? With the submarine and Saran Jones. What's it called? Vigil.
Vigil, and yeah. That, and they did and a think, second season of that, surprisingly.
Yeah, they did, surprisingly, because the first one was kind of standalone, but they did a second season anyway. Anyway, that one's really good, too. Lots of bonus recommendations there. Will, thank you so much for talking sports with me.
Thanks
I appreciate
so much
it.
For having me again.
It's great to have you. Hey, everybody, we had 2 ads in this episode, which means we did this as an episode for everybody. You got the whole episode. Next time, you will not be able to hear the complete episode unless you become a Downstream Plus subscriber, where you'll get ad-free versions of every episode and every other episode thereabouts. All the segments go to the Downstream Plus subscribers, and only some go to those who do not subscribe. Very easy way to remember how to get Downstream Plus. Go to downstream.plus. That's it. Yes, downstream.plus. Today, you can find Will at undertheknife.substack.com for all of your sports injury and other reading, because I enjoy it when Will goes off topic. It's fun. I'm sure you have readers who are like, stop writing about things that aren't the things that I love the off topic stuff. It's so great. So fun.
Thank you.
So you can find Will there. You can find me at sixcolors.com and many other podcasts here at Relay and theincomparable.com. I'll be back in 2 weeks with more Downstream. I think Joe Dalian will be back then. But cool. Until next time, sports fans, thank you for joining us. And thanks again, Will.
Thank you.